Hello, Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. How are we doing this evening? There we go. There we go. Welcome to the program. This is Smashville Live, of course, on ESPN 102.5. The game brought to you by our wonderful sponsors, New Amsterdam Vodka, Cool Springs Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, Yeehaw Brewing Company, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. See, I'm already flustered, Vince. My guest tonight on the show, Vince Gill. Everybody give it up for Vince for being here.
Thank you, folks.
There you go. We're going to talk a little hockey, talk a little music, talk a little life maybe. Who knows what's going to happen tonight on the show. So we do appreciate all you guys coming out and supporting us. We're going to give away tickets to the Buffalo game coming up on Saturday. So if you want to register, the box is right over there, I believe, to my left on your radio dial. So make sure you register. We'll give away a couple of tickets. That's going to be a special one. It's a whiteout with all the Winter Classic stuff. They only get to wear the Winter Classic sweaters twice, according to the rules. So this will be one of them this year. So they get to do that on Saturday night against Buffalo. So if you want to go, register over there, and we'll give those tickets away a little bit later on this evening on the show. Vince, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be here with everybody. Thanks for turning up.
There you go. So I want to get started with hockey, first of all. And just obviously, this is an extraordinarily stable franchise under David Poile and the way it's been built and run. And you obviously are very closely tied to the organization. Just how surprising is it to see them make a coaching change? And then just in general, through Barry Trotz and through Peter Laviolette, it's just been such an extraordinarily stable group. It had to be a little bit of a jolt to the system as a fan to see them make a move like that in the middle of the season.
Well, I happen to be the kind of fan that I know my limitations, as Clint Eastwood would say, and I'm a novice. You know, I love the game, and I don't know a whole lot about it. I know the rules. I know all that kind of stuff. But I'm for them no matter what. And as long as they're kind of doing what they think is the right thing to do, you know, they know way better than me. So
well, me too.
I'm going to be there win or lose, and whoever's the coach and whoever the players are, I'm in.
Well, let me get started then with how that got started. And you obviously moved here, for those that don't know, moved here in the early 80s. I want to say, 83? Am I right on that?
I moved here in 1983 to live, and I made my first trek to Nashville when I was a junior in high school in 1974 and fell in love with the city and the music community and kind of knew that I think that at some point I'd show up here.
Well, we'll get to that trek. I think fans want to hear about that. But you move here, and you've seen this city through all those years changed, obviously, in a dramatic way, in particular since the mid-90s. But when do you remember your first experience with the Predators hockey organization when they announced it? Were you instantaneously on board? Did you go to a game? What was it that sort of drew you in and hooked you as a Predators fan?
Well, I was going to come no matter what, because as a kid in Oklahoma City, of all places, we had a farm team of the Boston Bruins. And in the 60s, the Boston Bruins were pretty unbelievable, and the Oars and Espositos and all that. And actually, one of the guys that played for our team was Terry Crisp.
And that's incredible.
Yeah, and I've got like autographed pictures from when I was a kid of the team, and he's in the pictures. And they came to town. I knew they were coming to town, and I was actually invited by Craig Leopold, the owner at the time, to join. You know, to be a partner with him. And unfortunately, I was going through a divorce at the time, and it wasn't the right thing to do. But I said, I'll tell you what, man, I love hockey, and I've been a hockey fan my whole life, and whatever I can do to help, you know, just let me know what I can do. So they put my face on billboards across town without any teeth and said, you got tickets. And so to promote the team, we played a lot of times at the band stage in between periods and just everything, anything they needed. And I just feel like I've been here since even before day one, in a sense. And I actually got to... With Mayor Bredesen at the time, before he became governor, he's the one that brought the arena to Nashville. And he asked me to sit on a panel to pick the design of the arena that was going to get built. And it was a big thrill for me to see how all that worked. And then Amy and I did the first concert in Bridgestone.
Right.
I don't remember what it was called back then. But so I've got a long history.
Gaylord Entertainment Center?
Maybe. I don't remember. It's been a few different
things.
There's
a Somme in there, too, I think.
Yeah, there was a Somme Center. But anyway, I've just, you know, I've been involved since day one, and they don't have a bigger fan than me.
What a genius move. And I don't think that they got enough credit at the time for putting the building where they put the building. Because, again, you can speak to this to anybody who didn't live in Nashville in the late 80s and early 90s. downtown Broadway was a little bit different.
Sketchy.
Than it is today. And but it's really the reason it's changed is because of the decision to put the building where they did and how much that's changed that area.
Well, my favorite thing about the picking of who did the design was that the architectural team that built it, they were the only ones that had the front doors face Broadway and face the Ryman and be welcoming of downtown. And all the rest of the designs were south. They all knew that the growth of downtown was going to be to the south and whatnot. But to me, it was really cool that they had that homage to the history of this town that faced the Ryman, and that meant a lot to me.
Vince Gill hanging out with us here, of course, on Smashville Live at Brewhouse 100. And I think what's interesting is, you know, I was in, and again, not, don't worry about the time here. I was in college, and I drove back to go to the very first playoff game against the Red Wings in Game 3. And I went to the first games. I was in high school, and I loved the team. And I grew up like you, a hockey fan before. There wasn't a lot of us here in town at the time. And I remember coming back, and I remember that first playoff game. It would have been, 04? So I would have been a junior or senior in college, and just that moment in time where you just go, oh, my God, I get it, right? Like, the whole thing just clicks. So obviously you were much more integrated into the organization, but do you have as a fan moment, as, you know, in the stands, you know, watching team play that you remember going, like, I this is something special? Is there anything early on in your fandom as a Preds fan that really stands out to you?
Well, I think what I remember most is how many, when they play the Red Wings, there'd be more Red Wings jerseys in the stands than we had Preds jerseys, you know. But with winning came, you know, more attention and more fan base. And once everybody understood the game, and I'm telling you, if you've never seen a hockey game and you go see one live, it'll be your favorite sport, hands down. It's so much fun. And the thing I love, I think, more than anything about this game is watching the players. There's not a lot of grandstanding. There's not a lot of, hey, look at me, notice me, I'm the greatest thing that ever lived. It's really just hardworking guys. They, you know, celebrate each other a little bit, but it's not that whole kind of thing that sports has going on today. And it makes it pretty appealing. It's like every man's sport.
And it's almost like if you do some of that, the other guys are going to come get you a little bit sometimes.
Maybe so, yeah. Hey,
did you grow up a fan of all sports? Did you consider yourself a sports fan growing up?
Big time.
So outside of hockey, you were football, basketball, baseball. Any particular favorites?
Well, as a kid, we didn't have any teams in Oklahoma. We didn't have a pro football team or a baseball team. I could listen to Cardinals games on the radio, and I liked Bob Gibson, and I liked the Cowboys, and they were the closest football team we had. Collegiately, Oklahoma was a powerhouse. Oklahoma State was great, so I rooted for anybody from Oklahoma. But, I kind of had favorite players as much as I did teams, you know. And if my favorite player was, as a kid, baseball player was Willie Mays or Hank Aaron or whoever it might be, that's who I'd be drawn to root for.
Yeah, I was going to say, I grew up loving – I was a Mets fan growing up, and for some reason I liked Mike Piazza as a Dodger. I have no idea why. I can't. Maybe the story of being drafted as late as he was. I don't know what drew me to him as like a 12-year-old, and then of course he ends up at the Mets, and it's one of those things where you go, "How did that work out?" But it is amazing how we latch on as young kids to individual athletes.
Absolutely.
And you already mentioned Bob Gibson and Willie Mays, and so it is fascinating. I think that's another part of the Preds story that I think is really interesting is that today, in 2020, like I have two small daughters who are under the age of four, and they are huge hockey fans. Like they love hockey. They don't really watch the other stuff. Like if I put on football or basketball, but they love hockey. And I don't. It's the first real generation where now we've got a second run of people that are growing up as Preds fans.
Yeah, I think so. I think the game, like soccer, is a new game. You know, in my era of being a kid, it wasn't that popular. You know, especially where I lived, you know, in Oklahoma, but. I think it's great. You know, you see how kid-friendly it is down there at Bridgestone and the team and sport kids and just it's a great environment, you know. It's still – and they've cleaned up the game a bunch, so it's not as
– Sure.
Quite as bloody and as physical as it used to be, you know. And so
you got to say all the right things on that subject. Everybody does. We all have to say the right things. Like, oh, it's definitely safer. We want the game to be safer. But there is a part of me, again, like you, I grew up liking hockey – when it was very different than it is today. So there is a little part of you that misses that a little bit at all?
Oh, maybe a little bit. It was fun to see Chara get his bell rung the other night and buckle his knees. I love that. But, you know, I was really good friends with Darcy Hordachuk, who was kind of our tough guy for a stretch, you know. And he told me a story about some team that came to town, and they just traded away their tough guy, you know. And so they had a new tough guy, and Darcy and him obviously dropped the gloves. And Darcy left him in a heap. I mean, just a heap. And he said, I skated by their bench, and I said, that's your tough guy? And they said they all came over the bench trying to get him. But I've had a lot of, you know, I've had some good relationships with a lot of the guys over the years, and they like golf, they like music. It's a lot of things for all of us to get on about.
For those that don't know, not only was Vince blessed with amazing talent as a musician, he also unfairly took the genetic makeup of a fantastic golfer as well, which those of you can all get angry at him for that if you'd like. Vince Gill joining us here, of course, on Smash for Life. Give me some of the other names of players that stood out, not necessarily favorites or whatever, but just because I find hockey players to be hysterical. Like, they are just...
They're
just goofballs from time to time off the ice and constantly ribbing each other, constantly making jokes and cracking jokes and... There's a few of those guys on the team today.
I'm sure.
92, for example. You got to be on your toes if you're going to hang around 92. But is there anybody else that stands out as far as just personality-wise that you remember from sort of the early days?
I remember, you know, I think one of the first friends I made was Mike Dunham, and one of our first goalies, I think, and he was a great golfer. So we played golf together a time or two and had a great connection there, and he told me something really neat. He was watching me hit shots, you know, and he said, you'd have made a good hockey player. I said, what do you mean? He says, you got great hands. And I said, well, I can't skate, so I don't know how good I'd have been. And you know, I think David Legwand was the first player we drafted. And there was not a game that I didn't go to that he didn't come by, fist bump me through the glass, every game. You know, and now Roman does that, comes and says hi, you know, when they're in the – before the second period, and I just, you know, I just like what they do. I like that they're not so bravado, and like I said, there's not a lot of ego in this game, which I really, really like.
Yeah, it's a unique sport, and I think it's also not like that in every organization. I think that's a testament to the Preds and the culture that they've built and the people that they've chosen to bring into their organization.
Sure. I mean, Barry Trotz was one of the greatest guys ever, and David's a great guy. It's just, you know, like you said, from the top down, you just got quality people, and that's usually the result you get.
Absolutely. Vince Gill hanging out with us here on Smash for Live. We'll have a few more memories, of course, from his time as a Preds fan. There's a really good one from when the Preds clinched the Western Conference that we'll get to coming up after the break. So we'll do that when we return. Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue, let me hear it from you. There you go. Smash for Live 100 ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Smash for Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Welcome back to the show. You guys can clap. It's okay. You're not going to offend us. Vince Gill, my guest here. My name is Braden Gall. Our great sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company. Of course, we've got tickets for the Buffalo game coming up on Saturday evening, right before the All-Star break this Saturday night. So you can register over there, and we'll give those away probably at the end of the hour or so. I might put you to work, Vince, if you're all right with
you
that.
You got it.
You got to reach into the box there and pull out
a name. I can do it.
All right, so I would love to hear, and I think everybody would love to hear, a couple of the more special moments you've had as far as memories go. And I know... I'll just throw out a few.
Okay.
I'm going to throw out your memories to you, if that's
all right,
okay.
That'd be great. I don't have very many anymore.
But obviously, you've had so many opportunities in your life and your career through what you've done. But with the Preds specifically, being able to sing, for example, with your children.
Yeah.
Does that one rank up there? You kind of explain what that felt like to be able to go out there and do the anthem with your family and kind of, you know, just what that meant to you.
Well, it was neat to be able to watch your kids shine. You know, anytime you get, as a parent, you get the opportunity to put your kid in a place to where they're going to win and succeed and have something good, it's nothing better. And I was smart. I let them hit the money notes in the national anthem so they could so they could shine.
And then how about, can you tell everybody exactly where you were and what you were doing when the Nashville Predators clinched their first ever trip to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2017.
Well, I might have been out touring with those big shots, those Eagle boys, but that's what I was doing in 2017. I had just taken a job with the Eagles, touring with them, and that's probably what I was doing.
So on the night of...
Oh, I don't have a clue.
The night of, okay.
I don't have a
clue.
All
right, okay, all right.
You know what, truthfully, I live in the moment, and I don't really dwell on too many things in the past, and I wouldn't know what day it was. I wouldn't have known what happened, and I was just grateful that we got to go.
Well, we will definitely speak about the Eagles. In fact, I was asked by two people, if you do not ask Vince about his time spent with the Eagles, that I'm not supposed to do, like I can't do my job anymore. So we'll definitely get to that. But is there any other moments just for you as far as a fan goes, whether it's on the ice, whether it's family, anything that stands out to you as far as,
I have a couple of favorite memories. One was back when Todd Bertuzzi played. He was playing for the Red Wings. And I've been a pretty good trash talker back there in my seats for a long time. And they used to have a little bit of space in between the panes of glass. You know, so I'm right behind the goalie, and they can hear me when I'd get in there and yell in between the glass. And one night, Bertuzzi's down there, and they're scrumming down there right beside me, and I start letting him have it, you know, in between those panes of glass. And he finally looks at me, and he turns and he looks at me, and he goes, "Come on out." You know, he invites me out. He calls me out to drop him. And I started laughing. I go, "I can't skate." And he started laughing.
And he had any clue who
no,
you were?
No, of course just... not. Of course not. And then another one was we got to Corey Perry pretty good. With Anaheim in one of the playoffs. I was playing in the bandstand in between periods. And, you know, he was pretty famous for stirring stuff up and then skating away.
I think you just did that in Dallas, actually.
Yeah, well, we used to chant "Chelios is a sissy" for Detroit from the stands every time he touched the puck. And so while I'm up there singing, I started the chant, "Perry is a sissy." Every time he touched the puck for the rest of that series, that was the chant he got. That was one of my greatest achievements, I think.
He's only sold like 26 million records and had who knows how many top hits, you know, 21 Grammys, but... But Corey Perry is a sissy. That's at the top of the list.
One of my biggest hits.
That's actually one of my favorites, no question about it. Vince Gill hanging out with us here, of course, on Smashville Live. Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. And I do want to talk a lot of music tonight, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Because this is a city that is obviously in love with its music. And just sort of, you know, when you started, from what I've read, your father, obviously a huge musician, mm-hmm. Also a lawyer, so an interesting combination there.
Deadly.
just sort of how did you, when did you fall in love with music? When did it hit you that, like, this was the thing that I feel it, right?
You know, I don't remember a time when I didn't play music. You know, I couldn't say I started playing guitar when I was 7 or I started when I was 9. I was playing, my mom has a picture of me laying down on the couch, and I wasn't even 2 years old, and I'm sleeping, and I've got my arm around a guitar. And I can't even fathom a day that music wasn't a part of my life. I remember my first conscious memory of music was hearing my grandmother play "How Great Thou Art" on the piano. And my dad sang a little bit and played a little bit, so I just had somebody to play with and sing with. And my brother played a little bit. So music was like breathing. We always listened to records. I had a big brother and a big sister, and they played a bunch of records that I got to hear. And so I had this really nice, diverse palette of things that I liked before I ever started buying my own records.
So obviously people found music through church, obviously, was one way they found music.
Sure.
The radio, certainly, like you're talking about from family, but obviously very different today how that functions. So how did you sort of find your sound? Obviously you came up through the bluegrass, you know, style and country style from Oklahoma. So how did you evolve even before you got out of the house, even before high school's over? How did your sort of music, like you said, you already had a pretty wide range of taste.
Yeah, mine really got started. You know, Merle Haggard said it best. He says music comes from two places. It comes from the church house or the beer house. And I was a little more beer house than I was church house. So as a 15-year-old kid, sure, I was out playing gigs in beer joints and bars and, you know, all that stuff. And my folks didn't mind. They knew how much I loved music. And they said, just keep your nose clean. Don't get in any trouble and have at it, you know. So a lot of school nights after a gig, I'd get home at 2, 2 in the morning and make it to school and make my grades. And I never got too much of that. When are you going to get a real job? When are you going to get serious about a job and stuff? And they were really supportive my whole life.
That's got to be unusual.
I would think so.
That's got to be unusual, not only just today or, you know, the 80s, but, you know, growing up, to have a set of parents that's like, do your thing. Stay out as late as you need, you know, but this is clearly something that you cared about deeply, and they recognized that obviously very early.
And I think my mom, hearing her talk about, you know, every now and then they'd interview her about me, you know, over the years, and the one thing that she said that stuck out to me forever and always will was they would ask her that question. They said, did it bother you that your son was 15 years old playing in beer joints and out knocking around and struggling and playing for $20 a night and this and that? Did it bother you that he didn't get a real job? And she said, I didn't care anything about having a rich kid, but I sure cared about having a happy kid, and I've got a happy kid. So, you know, it's all what you make it.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of parents that can take that lesson, I think.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, you know. But
right.
Even if I'd have never really hit a big lick, I'd still play. I'd still be playing in some joint somewhere 5 nights a week, and I know that without fail.
So your decision, you graduate high school, and you're living in Oklahoma, and you decide, well, okay, I'm going to go be a musician.
Yeah.
Probably never even thought second twice about it, right? You just said, you know what, I'm going to go do this.
It's true.
You moved to Louisville, correct, right after high school? So take us through that decision where you just said, man, I'm off, I'm gone, here we go.
Well, I'd made no plans to go to college, you know, because I was out working a lot and playing a lot and didn't see the benefit of going to college for me. You know, I just didn't know what that would do to help me doing what I knew I wanted to do. I was lucky in that when I was 14, 15 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. Most kids don't. Even once they get to college, they're not sure what they want to do. And I graduated high school, and a couple weeks later, these guys from a band in Kentucky called and said, hey, we need a lead singer. And I said, I'm on my way. And
that's crazy.
Never thought twice about it. You know, it was hard. It's really hard to pull out of the driveway and drive away and go to a strange place. But, you know, I've always done that. You know, I went from there, and I said, well, I got a job in California. I moved to Southern California. And that was a great move. You know, I got to meet all kinds of great people out there. And changed my life.
Vince Gill joining us here on Smashville Live at Brewhouse 100. And did you hear – when was the first time you heard your own music being played, whether it was radio or somebody else? Do you remember that moment?
Very, 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 very well. I can drive you to the place. I was a 17-year-old kid, and we'd made a record, the band that I was in, and lo and behold, some guy played it, you know, on a disc jockey somewhere in Oklahoma City, and I was driving on I-40, and I went nuts, man. I just freaked out. I had a CB radio, and I got on a CB radio, and I started screaming, man, they're playing my song on the radio, you know, and it was, I was hooked, you know. I said, if I try, you know, you never know what could happen, and I had the guts to try.
I can't imagine the adrenaline rush for a teenage kid.
It was life-changing.
It's got to be unbelievable.
You know what it did? It gave me hope. I didn't know it at the time, but this was the first thing I'd ever done, and somebody played it. And I said, that gives me hope. So if I try, maybe, you know, maybe something good will happen.
It's also a pretty good message there. Just a lot of life messages here on Smashville Live. No, it's very true, though, because I think so many, like, I wonder about my kids, you know, how, what is it that I want them to find what they love, and I want them to be happy, and all this, the same things that every parent wants, but I think hope is a big fuel. It's a big piece of fuel for young people to know that, hey, there's somebody that's got their back, but also you can do this.
Well, it's astounding what will happen if you give a kid hope. If a kid has no hope, he has no hope, you know, and I don't think they'll let you down if you give them a chance to make a good decision. It's one of the reasons I've done this Vinnie Golf Tournament for the last 27 years, is it goes to places where people have an opportunity to make a good decision, you know. And if you give somebody in this world a chance to make a good decision, I think they will. A lot of times they won't. A lot of times there are no good decisions to make.
So we need to provide some good decisions for people. That's what we got to do. Smashville Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Vince Gill is our guest this evening. We will continue discussing more music, more Preds, more hockey. Obviously, some life advice from Vince as well. So we'll continue this conversation here. Our great sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and a couple of tickets to the Preds-Sabres game coming up on Saturday night. We're going to give those away next segment. So let's hear it from Brewhouse 100 here in Bellevue. My name is Braden Gall. This is Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Predators fans. This is Smashville Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Vince Gill, our guest this evening. My name is Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our wonderful sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company. Again, just a few more minutes to register for tickets. So I'll give you guys another 10 or 15 minutes or so. So if you have not registered to win some tickets, please come on up. The box is right over there. You can sign up, and we'll give away a pair of tickets to the Sabres game on Saturday night. Again, going to be a really fun event. The whiteout's going to be there. All kinds of cool stuff on Saturday night. So make sure you come up and register, and we'll give away some tickets here in just a few minutes. A couple of more questions about your early musical, more formative years, if you're all right with that, Vince.
Sure.
I'm curious, learning to play music and learning once you hear something you love and you learn how to play it when you were growing up through the ear. And now it's very different today, I imagine, where you've got YouTube and you can go watch people play, you can go see things up close. You got a million cell phone videos out there about everything. How do you think that's had an effect at all, or do you think it's still, you know, I guess the question is the evolution of learning to become a musician over time through technology, has it changed the music, or is it still just the artist making the music and that's really what matters the most?
I think it's still the same. I think it's still, people never grow tired of a great singer singing a great song, and young musicians have way more opportunities than I did as a kid. I had to dig it out of listen to a record, you know, and just figure it out. It's funny, even today, I have several of my heroes that play guitar, and I was playing with one of them, and I looked, and I played this my whole life one way, and I watched him, and I go, oh, you're doing it on the 8th fret, not the 3rd, and no wonder it sounds like that. And just even still today for me, I'm still learning.
Who are those?
Well, guys,
those
like James Burton. James used to play with Elvis. And, that's the reference to that story. But I mean, these kids, they have an opportunity to actually see how it's done, and music is as visual as it is as much about just listening to it. We didn't have anything visual to really sink our teeth into very much. You had a couple of shows on the weekend, like Bandstand or some of those kinds of things, where you could see your favorite group play a song, but the rest of it, you just had to figure it out in the air, you know?
So some of your favorites then. Give us, you know, like 22-year-old Vince Gill is playing gigs and writing music and in a band. He's left home. He's figuring out life. Who are you listening to at that time? Who is it that really you think kind of helped formulate and influence you?
Oh, truthfully, it was anybody great. You know, you could learn something from a jazz musician. You could learn something from a country singer. You could learn something from a bluegrass musician. It didn't really matter. I had, you know, I love people like Bonnie Raitt. I love people like Little Feat. I love, you know, a little more obscure things. And it didn't matter where it came from. Like I said earlier, my palate was diverse. I liked anything great.
I could listen to Spanish Moon like 100 times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great band. I got to record with some of them, and unfortunately, Lowell died before I got out to have a chance to get to know him out in California. But so many great. I mean, it's great everywhere. You can find great music anywhere now.
Along those lines, you've obviously played a billion shows in every country in the world. And do you have some? Number one, do you have any artists that when you first met them that you actually got some nerves? Either, you know. Like somebody that you were starstruck by, that you met and you were like, I can't believe I'm shaking this person's hand or playing music with them or whatever it may be.
Yeah, the first time I got to play music with Chet Atkins was powerful, because we were doing this TV thing together and we were gonna jam together and I couldn't get my hands to go on the instrument, you know, and it was Chet, and I was going, my God, it's Chet, you know, and he started playing. He finally scolded me, yelled at me. He goes, you going to help me or not? You know, and, oh, yeah, sorry, Chad. And away I went, you know. But that's kind of the beauty of it all, you know, is you never get so – I'm 62 years old, and I'm not jaded, you know. I'm still inspired by something Eric Clapton can do or a 16-year-old kid can do. You know, you just – I want to be moved by music, and I don't care who does it, you know. So it's still fun to me to break new ground, play. You know, I've done so many things with people over the years that if I'd have known all this was going to happen, you know, I've worked on about 1,000 artist records as a session musician and singer and played on what it is they were doing, and I didn't ever dream that up. You know, got to play with Eric Clapton. I got to play with so many people that I would have never dreamed that in a million years. I'm playing with one of my favorite bands that I had as a kid, the Eagles, you know, and now I'm up on stage with Joe playing Rocky Mountain Way. And you couldn't plan it. You couldn't dream of, you couldn't even dream of it because it didn't seem anywhere possible.
What would your advice be to the 16-year-old kid who's playing guitar and you're sitting there going, man, that kid's pretty good. What's your advice now?
I'd say never lose sight of why you want to do it, because you love it. You know, and that's what I've discovered that I know about myself, is I would have done it no matter what because I loved it. I never let the results of my success or failure dictate my definition of what it is that I was doing. You know, my ears have never lied to me, and I've trusted them my whole life. And if something tells me in my ears that it's good, that's all I can do. I can't make the world like that, make the world buy that. And, you know, you make a record and it might sell 10 copies, it might sell 10 million. But the truth is, not one note changed because of it.
Yeah.
So I don't have too much stock in the results so much of being my definition of what I've accomplished.
Can you try to put into words what it's like to write an album, put together all the emotion that goes into writing something, and then people not pick up on what you were doing? And obviously you've had an unbelievable amount of success, but I'm assuming not every record has been...
No.
You know, so...
not even close.
Like, so what is it like to just pour yourself into something like that and then just send it out into the world and kind of just let it land where it's going
to
land?
Well, you have to learn to let it go, you know, because you can't control it at any point. Like I said earlier, you can't make somebody like it. You can't make somebody buy it. So... why should you let it define you? You know, and I feel like I heard people say that music is like art. Art is never finished. It's just abandoned. And that's what you do. You play as good as you can. You sing as good as you can. You go, that's about all I've got. You know, let's see what happens.
I think you got enough. Well, I think you got enough. Vince Gill joining us here on Smashville Live as we're talking a lot of music on the hockey show tonight. Hope everybody's okay with that as Vince is hanging out with us tonight. See, there you go. Was there ever a moment, you talked about successes and failures and the grind to sort of get to where you get to. Was there ever a moment where you thought maybe it wasn't going to work? Like in the early years, whether it's California or whatever, was there ever a moment where you said, you know, it's okay, I'm still going to play, I'm still going to be with my family or whatever, but it's not commercially going to work?
Well, that was never my goal, so it never really entered into it. My goal was never to be a star, so to speak. My goal was to just be a musician and see where it took me. And I moved away from home. I lived in the attic of some guy's house for $15 a month. And I realized I don't need much, you know. I found a way to make a couple hundred bucks a week and survive and live and eat and pay rent. And to me, being able to never have had to have a real job since I started playing music is, to me, a success. I always was able to provide. A lot of years it was really, really lean, you know, and it was staggering to see how little it took to get by, you know. So you don't need too much either.
No, it's amazing. Vince Gill joining us here. What about venues around the country? Certainly the Ryman is as special a place in Nashville. We are obviously very proud of our Ryman here.
As we should be.
At the Mother Church. And so I think I would stand it up against anything else anywhere in America, but there are plenty of amazing places where music is revered and treated the way it is at the Ryman. Where are some of your favorite experiences around the country as far as where you got to play?
Well, that's number one. Ryman has always been my favorite, you know. And when I moved here, it wasn't even operational, so it was not something I got to do until they redid it in the mid-'90s, early 90s. And it's everything that you'd hoped it'd be. You know, the environment is great. The closeness of the crowd is great. Everything about it's great. If you've ever seen Red Rocks in, just south of Denver in Colorado, yeah. It's a natural Red Rock amphitheater. That's a magical place. That was a magical night for me. In 1981, I was playing with Pure Prairie League at the time, and I just lost my granddad. He passed away, and this was the first music I'd played since he passed. And Emmylou Harris was one of my heroes, and we were opening for her that night, and I was singing a song for my granddad, an old gospel song, and I'd never sung with her before, and she was my hero, and she just waltzed out of the side and started singing it with me, and it was unbelievable. And then later that night, we went to see Merle Haggard playing in a bar, and he was doing a tour of all honky-tonks, and I got to go with Emmy to meet Merle, and so things like that, you know, that you just wow. pinch-yourself kind of moments. And all you need, you know, the truth is, all you need is a great crowd to have a great show. The venue can be great. You can have a dead crowd, or the crowd's not digging what you're doing, or whatever. It's still a great place, but
it's about the people.
You could play in here. You know, we could play in here, and if we had a roaring good time, everybody go away yeah. thinking it was a cool place.
Yeah. For those who have not been to Red Rocks, it is in just outside of Denver, Colorado, and when you're in the seats, you can see for hundreds of miles. You can. When you're up there in the rocks, you can just see forever, and it is. I got a chance to see Jack White play there a couple of years ago, and it was with my wife, and it's one of those yeah. transcendent moments. Of course, Emmylou Harris and Jack have a relationship, but I did not get to go watch Merle Haggard in a bar later that night, unfortunately.
And the Troubadour is a great place. The Troubadour yeah. is a great old songwriter club in Los Angeles. First place I played when I went to Southern California. It's where so many of those people that I idolized, that was their hangout, their go-to place, and so I played a lot of great places, maybe two or three times.
You mentioned Merle Haggard. He obviously has a very crazy backstory with the, you know, with where he's from and the railroad and the whole thing. And I'm just curious, just from where you're from in Oklahoma. Certainly, Nashville has this all the rich history in music, but Austin has a lot of sort of sister city ties to Nashville with Willie and Johnny Cash and all these guys. Is there anything about sort of what makes like, why does Nashville end up as Nashville? Why does Austin end up as Austin? Why do some of these places end up as these music hotbeds of just extraordinary talent and songwriting and storytelling?
Man, Nashville is just kind of where it, I think, largely because of the Opry. The Opry started in 1925, and this was the place everybody migrated to. Nobody's from here, you know, to speak of. I know there's a lot of natives, and I don't mean that. I mean it humorously, but still, I came from Oklahoma, so-and-so came from Texas, so-and-so came from Arkansas. Everybody's from everywhere else, and they came here. And I think that's what's great about it. I don't know if you got to see the documentary that Ken Burns did on the history of country music, but that was one of the most powerful things that's ever happened in our music's history of almost 100 years. To get that story told by them was beautiful, and it's... Man, I don't know what else I would do if it wasn't music.
Well, and Ken knows how to tell a story.
He does.
There's no question about that. All right, we'll give away some tickets when we come back. Everybody put your hands together for Vince here at Brewhouse 100. New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company. This is Smashville Live. My name's Braden Gall. We'll give some tickets away when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. How are we doing? Just a few more minutes here. This is Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Vince Gill alongside Braden Gall and our great sponsors, New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. We're about to give away those tickets to the Buffalo Sabres game. I know I promised we're going to do that, but we got a few more people that want to sign up, so we want to keep it fair for everybody. So just a few more minutes, and then we'll draw some names out here, obviously. Vince, how many games do you get to in a year? Like, how many do you – obviously –
As many
you
as
you got
I
a career,
can.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it just the calendar sometimes wins, and I can't make a game, and I got family that loves the hockey. My grandkids just came down; they live a couple miles away, and so everybody loves the games, so we divvy out the tickets when I'm gone and see who's my best friend when they want
to
go.
So, all right, I'm almost to the end of the show, and I almost didn't do my job, which is to ask you about the Eagles gig and you know, when they call and they say, hey, would you like to be a part of this, and sort of what that means to you and being a part of the whole thing and then the tour. And wasn't it international, right? You're like, you're starting in New Zealand or something.
Man,
and you're
all
over
everywhere.
The place.
We've been everywhere the last 3 years.
What was that experience like for you?
It's indescribable. You know, it's surreal. It's a lot of things. You know, it was easily my favorite band growing up. You know, them and the Beatles and the Stones would be the three that really did what they do, you know. And it's been an amazing experience to understand how important songs are. You know, at 62, I see how powerful these songs are to people. And so the fact that I was the guy they called was just unbelievable. And they, you know, said, would you be interested in doing this? And I said, when do we leave? You know, this is an easy one. And
yeah,
it's interesting because I'm doing it sadly because the passing of an old friend. And Glenn was a great friend of mine, and we knew each other for close to 40 years. And, I keep that in the front of my mind, that you're only doing this because of something tragic and sad that happened. And so that keeps me focused, and I'm having a blast, you know. I mean, straight up, you couldn't have more fun playing the best songs that have ever been. I remember.
So you're taking it easy, you would say.
So to speak, yeah. But I remember asking Henley, you know, I asked Don, I said, okay, you guys have written some of the best songs in the world together, you and Glenn. I said, what's the very first song you ever wrote? And he said, Desperado. And I said, no way. No.
First crack.
You had to write some 4 or 5 crappy songs. He laughed. He goes, no, that was the first song we ever wrote.
That's so amazing.
You understand that and that history, and you knew it was meant to be. You know.
You mentioned Beatles, Stones, and the Eagles. My daughter heard Ballad of Josie Wales on the radio the other day, and she goes, Daddy, who's that? And I was like, that's the Beatles, honey. Like, but she doesn't ask me about everything, right?
Sure.
She picks and chooses, and I have no idea what she likes yet, really.
Sure.
But it's a song that clearly holds up, obviously.
Well, that's why.
And,
the songs.
And that's what I was going to ask is, are we ever going to have bands that last for 50, like the Stones are still playing this, they play Satisfaction the same way they've played it 400,000 times. Are we ever going to have bands that do that again, or are we past that, you think?
I have no idea.
With our attention span,
I think, you know, it's a different world, you know. But, you know, great songs are great songs if you got enough of them. I mean, think about it. The Beatles were only together for 7 or 8 years, then they broke up, but those songs are so great they've lasted our entire lifetime. And so, you know, once again, those great songs don't really care who sings them because they're great songs. But the attention span is probably what's different. You know, and if it's a single song-minded life that we have now with songs, then, yeah, great albums like you know, Rubber Soul, or great albums
sure.
like Hotel California.
Sure.
They may still get made, but who knows? I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Well, do you still listen to full albums all the way through? Do you still buy a record and listen to a full album, or are you...
Straight up, no. No, I mean, you know, very few people make them.
Right.
Hard to find them. You know, I'm not the... I've never sent a text. I'm not much into the social world.
Do you guys all hear that?
Digital world, but I like life in the way I can hear it.
I will say, as I've gotten older, the concerts I've enjoyed more are the ones who force me to put my phone away in the bag,
yeah.
And they say, no, you're not going to bring the phone in. And then you see all the people, like, really angry at the doorway, and then they get in, and all of a sudden they have to keep their heads up, and they look at each other in the eyes, and they have a great time. So I'm a big fan of what you're talking about there.
Thank you.
Let's draw a name out here for a pair of tickets to the Buffalo game here. We just got a couple minutes left,
okay.
So I'll put you to work here at the end of the show, if you don't mind. There we go. He's the musician. I'd ask for a drum roll, but he's
Beth,
busy right
Beth
now.
Beth Pack, where you at, Beth?
There you go, right there, right in front. And a great
scream
as well.
I told you I could
love
work
it.
That out for
yeah,
you.
Round of applause for Beth. There we go.
She bought me some wings, and I pulled the ticket. I don't know what you've won, but congratulations.
You are going to the game on Saturday against Buffalo, so congratulations. There you go. This is why you come out to Smashville Live, folks. This is why you do this. You come out to places like this. Vince, again, I don't –
I'll be there.
Thank you so much for hanging out and, yeah, and giving us, sharing some stories. There's about 4,000 more questions I'd love to ask you, but we do appreciate you coming out for the hour. And obviously everybody here in Bellevue, grateful for your wisdom and storytelling. We do appreciate it. So
I love this team, and I love rooting for them, and I always will.
Well, there you have it, folks. I don't think we should ask him to say anything else. That's all we need right there. So, everybody, let's give Vince a big round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for coming out. Want to thank our great sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company. My name is Braden Gall. This is Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue and Smashville Live. Thank you all so much. We'll be back next week again. Of course, Preds back on the ice tomorrow night against Anaheim. For everybody here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, this has been Smashville Live. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everybody.